Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 431.
This week on the podcast, protests should feel more like protests and less like guitar circles, a graduate thesis from Brain Trust Live.
And somehow Donald Trump missed the opportunity to endorse a pro-rape candidate in the Pennsylvania primaries, and that seems like an oversight.
Plus, there's nobody to vote for on the LA mayoral ballot, just people to vote against.
And Biden had a prime stupidity week, but hey, at least the deficit's going down.
Plus, baby formula, let's find some.
And student loans, let's cancel some.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yes.
Well, Brent voted. And my ballot guide is coming. If you're somebody who is awaiting my ballot guide, it's on the way and it's coming late. And I'll tell you why it's coming late. It's because I'm depressed and everything seems not worth it. And while I do feel that you should continue voting, because why not?
Yeah. You know,
why not keep voting? Do everything. Try anything.
Here's my voting guide. Just fucking pick somebody.
Yeah. There's people to not pick. And we're going to go over that later in the podcast. There's definitely wrong choices. There's wrong answers here.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of right answers, though.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, we're doing a looser, we're taking a looser approach to voting. And our approach is largely predicated on the fact that voting not for someone terrible is really the best we can do. And there's some good candidates at the city council level. We're going to talk a bit about the city council races and the mayoral race in LA a little bit later in the podcast.
Yeah.
After we get through the pure excitement of Pennsylvania right now. But before we get into all of that, I have some comments on my thesis for this podcast. I've been coming armed with themes to Brent every Sunday.
Yeah, and I'm like, sure, let's do it.
And my themes are always the same. So they're not creative themes.
Keep making them crazier and crazier every week because I'm not going to push back.
My current theme, and this is partly a commentary on how depressing it's getting to protest, because we're just like, people are going to like really boring marches where they stand around politely and clap for speeches they can't really hear from people that they agree with, who are often entrenched in the system to the degree that they can't help solve any of the problems anyway.
Yeah.
And we're all supposed to sit around pretending like that made us feel better, when what I really want to do is like burn something down.
Well, that's the thing. You know, what we had here in Los Angeles yesterday was not a protest.
No.
And that's fine. I'm not saying that people shouldn't have gone to it, because
it was
what was available to them to do yesterday. But like, what yesterday was like people with, you know, punny signs listening to people speak to them in front of City Hall, which, as you noted when we were chatting earlier, was closed.
Right.
You know, so like.
Right. Nobody, well, so they hold all of these downtown on the one day no one's in their office.
Right.
And then everyone just talks to an empty building.
Right, there's no disruption.
Right.
At all, right?
Which is the only reason to have a protest, you guys. You can decide on the level of disruption you're interested in.
Sure.
You know, maybe you're not interested in setting trash cans on fire. Maybe you just want to block a little traffic or something. But like, a protest that causes no disruption is not really a protest.
Yeah.
It's a parade.
That's right.
And this isn't even a parade, because there's no marching. It's just a rally where you go and stand around and you listen to the same people give the same speeches on an issue that you know front and back already. No single person at any reproductive rights rally needs to hear one more sad abortion story. We've all heard 1 million of them. And they are not the audience for those stories anyway. What people really needed to do was express somehow to their representatives and to just like media and people at large that they are angry. And
angrier than their representative is.
Exactly. And the one thing that no one is able to do when rallies are set up in this polite speech giving way is show anger.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, I'm one of America's leading wimps. So I'm not out here like battling the LAPD with my fists or anything. Like, obviously I'm afraid of everything, including bees. And like, that's, I'm not the right person to be at the front lines of a violent situation. I don't even watch movies with violence in them. But I do feel like there's a missing opportunity here, because I have a lot of like anger about what's going on right now.
Yeah.
It's not just frustration. It's not helplessness. It is anger. And what I want to do is take to the streets with people and shout about it for a while.
Well, and this is like
at least that.
Yeah. Well, and this is a classic. It's a classic protest move. It's not like you're asking for people to reinvent the wheel. It's like we've gone backwards on our protesting, right? Like, this is why what you're asking for, you know, one of the classic protest move is to shut down a freeway.
Right.
People have been doing that since the beginning of protests and freeways existed at the same time with each other. So, like, and that's a nuisance to people. Like,
well, you, the whole
and
it idea makes you noti- is right, to course, make people notice.
Right, and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, exactly.
That, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The way that we're conceiving of these protests is designed to not make anyone notice them because they're so commonplace, especially after the Trump era.
Yeah.
It's like we went to one of those every fucking Saturday for years.
Yeah.
And I need us to do something more, especially because the message at these protests continues to just be like, vote harder and donate.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear where my money needs to go. And I don't want to hear that I have to vote harder because nobody votes harder than me, you guys. It's borderline absurd how hard I'm voting. I'm literally sending out unsolicited voter guides to all of my friends against everyone's will just to make sure they vote in ways that are responsible to. Like, I'm voting as hard as I possibly can.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear any more about that. That's how that's my only option. I want to hear that there's another action I can take in addition to those things that will help me exercise this rage. But in doing that, let me get back to the thesis before we move on. I want us to all, instead of feeling hopeless by this lame showing of, you know, sad, entrenched speech givers, like giving the same speeches over and over. And I would say, like, the larger, like, national women's movement is not prepared for this moment. They have not been for years. They've been warned forever. But these large institutions are as entrenched as anyone else.
Well, they've been busy making sure Susan Collins gets reelected.
Exactly. Like, none of these large women's orgs are in a position right now to challenge the elected officials that support them.
Because they are one and the same.
They are one and the same. They're the same people. Yeah. So we should know to ourselves that that's the case. And we don't have to feel hopeless because of that. Because think about how inspiring the story of the recent GOP is when you think about it. They dreamed big years ago, thought to themselves, we're going to try something that most Americans don't want and that is completely batshit insane and also a bad idea. And we're going to make it happen.
Yep.
And after years of being pushed back, years of failures, years where they controlled all three chambers of Congress but couldn't repeal Obamacare, they finally are achieving something so unthinkably stupid that it's caught us by surprise, even though they warned us they were doing it this whole time.
Yeah.
That's action, you guys. I mean, if they can, they are changing the system from the inside, just like we're claiming that we wanted to.
Yeah.
So do not act like there are no outlets for us to pursue here, that there's no options for us to pursue, that, you know, that there's no, like, I think Democrats have really gotten into a phase where they just continually talk about how they'd like to do something, but they can't because of X, Y, and Z systems. You guys, the systems are made up. The GOP has shown us that.
And that's the thing. And
dream bigger.
And when you mentioned this to me, I was like, oh, this reminds me, because this is a tangent that I go on a lot when I complain about Democrats always talking, you know, being the party of good government, right? And I understand that, right? Like, as Democrats, we, like, are out here, like, wanting to convince people that, like, government can work.
Of course.
But we're also the party that then sort of, like, only can think of ways to function in the constraints of, like, the systems that they themselves put into place.
Good government is government that works for people. There is no other real obligation that you have if you are interested in good government other than ensuring that the government works for people.
Yeah.
That means that, like the Republicans, we can decide the government should serve us differently than it's serving us right now.
Yeah.
They aren't the only people that can do that. Yeah. Now, are they choosing to use this in a destructive manner? Sure. But if we can pursue fascism, I don't know why we can't pursue socialism.
I agree.
You know, I mean, like, they are showing us the way.
Yeah. Well, it's because you can do fascism and capitalism at the same time.
Yeah.
But you can't do... the Democrats are more likely to follow the Republicans into fascism than they are to go into socialism.
It's too
true. I know that that sounds like a really sort of
it's not insane because it's literally happening this moment.
Correct.
So you're describing our reality. So sadly, that would have sounded insane to me 20 years ago. But it sounds like an accurate description of reality right now. I just instead of feeling like we should be constrained by systems that aren't serving us, we can decide the system should work differently. And we can also name, I mean, this is what I think, you know, was so appealing about the Sanders Coalition to people that I think a lot of sort of mainline Democrats didn't understand. There was real power in naming the goal, even if the goal wasn't feasible right now. Naming the goal showed us that everyone wanted the goal. Once we could name the goal of Medicare for All, we found out everyone wants Medicare for All.
Yeah.
Now, the challenge is now, okay, how do we make that happen?
Right.
But that's the question we should be answering.
I was going to say, and we should have, as a party, once we found out everybody wanted it, even if we couldn't do it in that very election, we should have started a project.
Yes. Exactly, because that's what the Republicans did. They thought to themselves, we should get rid of Roe v. Wade. Why? Yeah. No one knows. It's just a stupid idea we had to control people. But they put their heads together and for years schemed to make it happen. They started a project.
Yeah.
And they worked together and they, you know, used their imaginations and they thought to themselves, the goal is getting rid of Roe v. Wade. It is not to ensure that we get rid of Roe v. Wade using the system as it is. We don't care about the system.
And
goal is the goal.
And I know Democrats have the ability to start a project because the current project that they are undertaking, which is going pretty great for a lot of them, is to shoot down the left.
Exactly. And they have stayed committed to that project.
Very committed to that.
For years.
Decades.
And they're doing a bang up job.
Yes.
But like, it just seems like instead of constantly falling back into this sense of helplessness, which I think is learned helplessness that the Democrats themselves have encouraged us to feel so we don't expect anything from them, decide that you have goals instead of that you have systems. Mm-hmm. The systems are bullshit. They're like the economy. We made them up. The rules are fake. All of it's nonsense.
Yep.
We can change it to do whatever we want. We can make it fascist. We can make it socialist. We can make it more democratic, less democratic. We can do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and I think also another thing that I was thinking about recently is the sort of the there is no such thing as like good or bad propaganda. There's ineffective and effective propaganda.
Mm.
I think another thing that happens is that the left, not the left, the center left kind of wants to, you know, that I notice them trying to police the sort of dreams of the left and the center left in a way that is designed to stop us from talking about universal truths. So like, I was thinking specifically about this when it comes to reproductive justice, and I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast already, but you know, specifically about how it is right and appropriate that activist groups use language that centers the most affected people in when they're talking about reproductive justice, because we want to make sure that the policies that we design are designed to serve the people that most need them.
Yeah.
It is not the same for national level politicians to act like the abortion crisis only affects Black women.
Mm.
Because their job is to tell us that that's a thing that affects all of us. And because of that, there's been this sort of incorrect narrative going around specifically about this issue that makes it sound like privileged white people have nothing to fear here. And so this is all just magnanimous activism that they get to do to help other people in other states, help poor people and people of color in other states. And that's not the fucking truth.
Yeah.
The truth is that rich white women still have issues when abortion is illegal. The truth is that even when you can get the illegal abortion, it's not always safe. The truth is that you have to travel to another country and maybe you can't do the travel in, you know, the time that you need.
Yeah.
The truth is that if something happens to you health-wise because of that abortion, if there are complications, you can't go to the hospital and tell them what happened.
Yeah.
So the truth is that everyone has something to lose here. And I think while I fully understand why activists on this issue center the stories of those most in need, I think the Democrats do that in an effort to stop us from having the political will to change things.
Mm.
And I think that that is, you know, and essentially they use our own language to police us from any kind of political action. And I think that is this sort of like, I think that's what's actually getting everyone kind of down, is it's like our own words are being weaponized to stop us from having the political will to do anything. Because sorry about it, when is the last time that all of American society got together to be like, we care deeply about poor Black women, so we'll vote on an issue that only affects them? The very people who are at these protests don't even vote that way, you know?
100%.
Like, make sure they know this issue is about them too.
Yeah.
Make sure that suburban white women realize this is their body on the line. It's not the body of people they've demonized on the line. It's their body on the line.
Yeah.
And like, the Democrats have been so sort of resistant to doing that. It's why, you know, it helps them make sure that every program is means tested and everything is, you know, everything is sort of like only affecting a limited population and rich people don't get any accidental help from the government because that's the big fear that they have instead of the fear that a poor person is slipping through the cracks.
Meanwhile, they're secretly giving rich people all the help.
Exactly. Like, I feel like the political rhetoric and the messaging that we're relying on is even a do-nothingism that is where our own words get weaponized against us. And like, we can just decide we don't want that from them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we can tell them that we understand this distinction. We can tell them that there is a difference between reproductive rights organizations talking about the people that are most impacted and fucking Kamala Harris doing it.
Yeah.
Because she should be talking about how everyone is impacted, because that is the job of the national party. And so I sort of feel like they're, you know, do-nothingism is almost like so embedded in even like the language that they use, and what they're using is ineffective propaganda. Yeah. It's all propaganda. Yeah. All political messaging is some kind of propaganda.
Sure.
Some of it's effective and some of it's ineffective. Yeah. And they are purposely relying on ineffective propaganda.
Well, and we also got a do-nothing president, too, with all due respect. I mean, not even any respect. Fuck that. I'm not giving him any. But, no. You know, we were talking...
I literally mentioned Kamala Harris instead of him just because she's the only one who would ever deign to talk about this issue the executive branch.
You know,
he should be saying something, I just know he won't, so I didn't even say
it. That's the thing. You and I were talking before the podcast, actually, because we were, you know, talking about things that, like, could be done, potentially, and, you know, we may have talked last week on the podcast, I can't remember, but a lot of corporations are out here talking about, like, giving, you know, thousands of dollars for women who need to travel from a state where they can't get an abortion or whatever. And I'm like, that's a great idea. You know who else could be giving women $4,000 to travel to get an abortion?
Just the federal government.
But then I was like, oh, well, it's too bad that we nominated and then elected a presidential candidate who has been against using federal funds for abortion their entire fucking career.
That's right.
So, like, on some level, like, surprise he's not doing anything because we got what we paid for.
Yeah. No, exactly. I think that's... I have, like, gotten myself into, like, a mental space where I don't even dream of him saying anything about this. Like, all of my focus is on Kamala Harris, who's the vice president. She can't even do anything.
Right.
But just, like, she's the only person in the executive branch who has any track record of caring about this issue at all. That is really fucking depressing, because if we learned anything from Veep, it's that the vice president doesn't have any power.
No.
None at all.
No.
So, in any case, the point is, take the lesson that the Republicans are teaching us and really internalize it.
Yeah.
You can, if you can dream it, you can build it. also, we passed 1 million deaths from COVID.
Jesus.
We're not going to have any precautions that we take in as a result of that. We're just moving ahead with it.
That was like, wasn't like 100,000 supposedly disqualifying to be president or something?
That's right. But 1 million, it's just no big deal. It's just a Tuesday. I don't know. There's something about the way that they are just, like, leaving us to the wolves on COVID. You know, there's no funding coming.
Well, the death rates are going up.
The death rates are going up among vaccinated and boosted people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and we're just all supposed to sit around, like, unmasked, just coughing on each other, not worrying about it. Right. And, like, I understand that the death rates are lower than when that first wave, because we, actually didn't know what COVID was then. But I also feel like it is really... I understand they're trying to balance a political need for people, you know, because people want to get things back to normal, and, like, a reality need, which is just, like, things are not normal and shouldn't be. But I think in the end, like, this lax policy is just creating more fear than it's solving. Like, I think there are people who've decided to forget about COVID, and that's going to be great until someone they know dies of COVID or, they're going to still be hit by COVID.
Yeah.
And then everyone else is, like, terrified at all times in public. I was talking to Brent a little bit earlier about my new public health take, which is consent-focused, in a, like, sexual health way. But similarly, I feel like the focus of all of our quote-unquote freedom should be our freedom to have the information about the risks that we're undertaking when we go into public spaces. And instead, we're focusing on our freedom to impose risks.
Yeah.
And that is a really important distinction. And I think also should be a distinction between Democratic and Republican policy. Like, it to me, it feels like the freedom to impose risk is really what the Republican Party is about. And the freedom to... understand risk should be what the Democratic Party focuses on. It's what certain people in the Democratic Party focus on. But this Democratic Party is along for the ride with the Republicans, focusing on making sure you have the freedom to impose risk without the freedom to understand what risks you're undertaking yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you walk into Target right now, it's not like everyone in there is announcing their COVID status and you can decide whether to mask or not, or you can decide what kind of mask, or if you need goggles, or if you need a space suit. Like, you were walking into Target and just, like, assuming that anything could be in the air and having to act as if the highest level of risk is always around you. And that's stressful. That's why everyone's freaking out.
Yeah.
In any case, everyone's freaking out, you guys. Things are falling apart just in part because everyone's acting crazy because they're freaking out.
Yeah.
They should stop freaking out so much. I mean, they can't because everything's going terribly. But like, that's why I'm my new optimism. The GOP is showing us the way kick. at least I have hope.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
At least I have hope.
Oh, boy. The Pennsylvania primary is on Tuesday, and it is going to be a double doozy.
I mean,
both parties.
Couldn't be a more exciting primary. It's their Senate. They have an open Senate seat.
Yeah.
Pat Toomey's seat?
Mm-hmm.
He's retiring.
Yep.
It's taken a very hilarious and exciting
turn.
Take
a note, other olds in the Senate.
Exactly.
Pat Toomey's retiring. You can retire from the Senate.
You're allowed. Anyone, you could retire from the House.
Sure.
You can retire from the presidency. They let you retire from anything. You should just go for it.
Yeah, and they all have great pensions because they work for the government.
They have great. So. That's. I am so livid.
Use your pension.
The number.
Also, they've all gotten ridiculously wealthy while in Congress. So they don't need. They don't need their pension.
They have wonderful pensions. Like, I'm probably never going to get to retire, and you are laughing in my face having this wonderful pension that my tax dollars pay for.
Working at 84.
Working at 84, trying to ruin my life. I can't with that. In any case, so an exciting Republican primary is afoot in the Pennsylvania Senate, yeah. And you know that because Dr. Oz is running.
They're about to Todd Akin themselves.
But they're about to Todd Akin themselves because a total loon bag is currently surging in the polls.
Basically in a three-way tie within the margin of error.
Yeah.
In the latest poll.
Her name is Kathy Barnett. She, sort of like that Missouri Senate candidate who's like an actual rapist, is really posed to be a headache.
That's where Todd Akin was from, too. Missouri loves that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Mitch McConnell is not, I don't think, looking forward to this outcome because... No. She poses some challenges to statewide office. So she started surging after she released this video called It Wasn't a Choice, It Was a Life, in which she talks about how her mother was raped when she was 11 and that Barnett is the living byproduct of that situation. It's an anti-abortion / pro-rape being okay video. It went sort of viral following the SCOTUS draft leak. And that's really what caused her to surge in the polls, really touched a chord with Pennsylvania voters. But then, not to worry, people started looking into her after they had not really paid her much attention. And so no one had really done any Oppo research on her. It turned out to be very easy to do Oppo research on her.
The Oppo research was easy.
Her Twitter account, she tweets things like, just confronted a Muslim today. and... Most importantly, she's a really big Stop the Steal advocate.
Huge.
Steve Bannon.
Big favorite of the Bannon podcast.
Loves her. He called her an audience favorite of his War Room podcast. And, you know, basically just for like never stopping on the election conspiracy route, but also refusing to concede when she lost a 2020 House race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's also close to Mike Lindell, obviously.
Of course.
A pillow entrepreneur and a random person running for Senate would be. But it's. Like, she's effectively running alongside somebody who was at January 6th. Like, whole thing is, like, a whole shit show of a mess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, she endorsed Doug Mastriano, who's probably going to win the primary. Yeah. And then he endorsed her. And a lot of people were like, well, she got a lot more out of that endorsement than he really did, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because she's a nobody. She was a nobody. Now she's one of the front runners of the Pennsylvania Senate primary. Yeah. But so this had been more of like a two-way race between Dr. Oz, Trump endorsed Dr. Oz, and David McCormick.
He got booed
at
a rally that Trump had for him.
I know.
Did you see that?
Yes.
By the way, good. Genius.
It's too good. Dr. Oz and McCormick have been hitting each other on numerous issues that only Trumpers care about, and just really having an ad war that's basically just hurt both of them while leaving room for Kathy Barnett.
Yeah, well, Barnett had only raised like $200,000.
Yeah, she didn't have any money.
She didn't have money.
No one had put any money, first of all, into Oppo research, but also into advertising against her. And so she arrived onto a scene where they had been obliterating each other with ad money. And so everyone hates both of them now.
Yeah.
And then she just sort of like arrived. My favorite thing about all of this is these new loon bag people have all, and that includes Eric Greitens, the Missouri guy, have all sort of pulled a Tim Ryan where they don't want to back McConnell for Republican leader anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm curious who they think should replace him. The evil genius
knows?
Himself.
Yeah.
But it's like getting to the point where they like maybe don't have time to like knock her out of this.
Yeah.
And first of all, this is a ridiculous race anyway, because Dr. Oz is not a more legitimate candidate than Kathy Barnett, random crazy lady who's running for office. Pat Toomey.
Trump, I think, was on.
Is a little concerned.
Yeah, when he got asked about it, he said something about like how she was like, she's an unknown and she's just a wild card and nobody knows anything about
her. Voters don't know about her. A lot.
Right. Well, that was Pat Toomey.
No, that, yeah. Oh, who were you saying about Trump?
Trump
said that too?
Something similar.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't. It's like they're trying to run.
Well, I really deeply look forward to finding out all those things about her in a general election.
Also, though, I think one of the things that's going to be very exciting about the next few days is she's black, and the Republican Party is the other opponents are planning to run racist ads against her, essentially. So they're doing what they do. I guess. But this is like the most bizarre and confounding collection of people who are all only interested. They have nothing to run on aside from Stop the Steal. And so they're all like engaged in fringe lunacy nonsense. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the only reason that Dr. Oz is in first place in that poll anyway, which is tied anyway. I saw something on the, I saw a story on this on the news the other day. And like, you know, before he got endorsed by Trump, he was at like 14% or something. And now he's at like 26 or something.
No, exactly.
Like that. I mean, it's essentially a three-way tie between these three. But like,
Club for Growth just booked $2 million worth of TV ads for her on Tuesday. Susan B. Anthony list endorsed her.
And also, didn't a bunch of people at the Trump Oz rally also then leave and say that they were going to vote for Barnett?
Yes. I mean, it's too good. One of those situations where, like, look, I actually don't love when a complete crazy person advances to the general in these situations because it's scary.
It's nerve-wracking. For all the reasons that we've been talking about for months on this podcast, the midterms don't look great for Democrats, and Pennsylvania is already a very dicey scenario.
Exactly.
Right? So, like, you don't love to see this woman in the general election, but also you'd probably rather run against her.
You'd rather run against her. And then the other thing, I think, is that in this stage of Republican Party lunacy, I don't know that it actually makes the difference that it should.
Well, that's probably true. What actual distinction is there between the three of these people?
Exactly. Like, in terms of how they'll govern, like, she'll say dumb stuff in public, for sure. Mm-hmm. Dr. Oz, also a person who will say dumb stuff in public.
Yep.
McCormick will be a more boring version of dumb stuff in public, for sure. Yep. But, like, I want to think that not all of them are essentially, like, the same level of extremist, but I think they are.
Yeah.
And I think that she's just, like, a surprise extremist, but, like, there is no meaningful difference between them, policy-wise or just craziness-wise. No. And so, like, on some level, I'm kind of like, go ahead.
Right.
Put her in.
Yeah.
Put anyone in. Who cares? All these people are terrible.
Yep. Exactly.
And then we also, though, on the left have a different primary situation going on. One that is deeply satisfying to anyone who's ever read a news article or looked at
CNN.com. Or listened to this podcast for the last 10 years.
Or listened to this podcast one time over the course of history. Because Connor Lamb, shoo-in for this, according to him.
Rising star.
Rising star. He's been rising for years.
Probably future president, Connor Lamb.
Right. Connor Lamb is the one person who's not really tracking.
Just in getting this obliterated. Primary. Because no one is interested.
By shorts wearing John Fetterman, who doesn't even have any endorsements. Just a Bernie guy in shorts, just walking around doing better than Connor Lamb. And why? Because nobody wants what Connor Lamb has for sale right now. Like, I feel like the New York Times wrote an article about it this week, which I think the article is notably hilarious because it's like, Brent and I could have dictated this article to you like 10 years ago in the exact same words.
The first time that he ran for Congress.
The first time that we knew immediately. We could have written this article in our sleep.
Yeah.
The Times is reporting on it as if it's like it's new information that nobody's interested in Connor Lamb. Like, Connor Lamb is somebody that even my moderate friends aren't interested in. Like, even my most moderate friends hate Connor Lamb. That's how much people don't care about Connor Lamb.
Yeah.
He is somebody who you could only hate because you certainly couldn't love him. He doesn't say or do anything. And he looks like a Ken doll, so you can't even pick him out of a lineup.
Yeah.
But, like, he is somebody who is so, like, aggressively tacking to, like, a 1990s-era Democratic message that is about working across the aisle and about incremental change in a moment where, like, the sky is literally falling.
Nobody is
who
interested.
Who wants that right now? Well, no, nobody.
Well, nobody.
Nobody, it turns out. So, in any case, Fetterman is out there, didn't get any endorsements, doesn't care. He's wearing that like a badge of honor because he's like, these fuckers and their establishment nonsense. I don't want anything to do with
it. By the way, John Fetterman, a person who I saw on television being asked about abortion the other day, and guess what he thinks about abortion?
That it's not his business.
Bingo.
That's the right answer.
Where's the line? Where do you think he thinks the line is?
Nowhere.
That's right.
That's right. You know where Connor Lamb probably thinks the line is?
Probably 16 weeks.
A very
weeks
specific
or
number
like
of
this.
Weeks that he has no reason to know about or care about.
Right, because he's followed some sort of science.
That's right. Science that he, as a non-doctor, is not in any way a professional in. But, like, the matchup here, and I think, you know, if you're thinking that this sounds like it's paralleling what's going on the right, I would say it's not, because I think that John Fetterman is just much more in line with what Democratic voters are looking for right now. And they're not looking for, he's not out there saying crazy shit.
Yeah.
He's out there saying entirely reasonable stuff. He's been elected statewide. He's incredibly popular there.
Yeah.
And he's somebody who, because he's won statewide once, has proof of concept that he could win statewide again.
That's right.
Which Connor Lamb does not have.
Correct.
What Connor Lamb has is dumb hair. And a face that is not recognizable. And you know, talking points that don't mean anything.
Yeah.
But I just love how the New York Times just discovered this.
I know. It's so good.
It's like the Democrats have been trying to position Conor Lamb as like the next big thing for so long. And it's like he just never is going to be the next big thing.
He can't be.
He's not a thing. He doesn't, like, there's no thing for him to be.
Right.
He's just a guy.
Zero charisma.
I mean.
And like in a way where like I'm talking about no charisma in comparison to like someone like a Pete Buttigieg.
I was going
to
say, he makes Pete Buttigieg look like a sparkling personality.
Correct.
Pete Buttigieg, who is not in touch with his own personality, sparkling compared to Conor Lamb.
Yeah.
John Ossoff, a laugh riot compared to Conor Lamb.
I mean, makes those Ossoff TikToks like he's a Gen Z influencer.
Exactly. I mean, that's, and Conor Lamb, by the way, is the same age as both of those fools. So this is, in a collection of boring brunette white males, he's offering the least, which is really saying a lot. I mean, that couldn't be a more boring trio if they tried.
But I do think that, like, this is, and I think we've talked about this before in terms of Fetterman. And look, there's some issues right now that Lamb has just sort of, like, recently been bringing up. A lot of this article was talking about how he maybe should have gone a little bit negative beforehand.
There was an incident that Fetterman was involved in.
Right, Fetterman pulled a gun on a black man that he thought because he heard gunshots and...
it's problematic.
You know, it's problematic. And so, like, there's things like that, and Republicans will probably use that against him. And
Rust Belt state situation that I don't have a relationship with.
There's a third completely qualified candidate who's black. Malcolm
Kenyatta. Who would be ideal.
Right, I was going to say, so if you are a person who has decided that you don't have any interest in Conor Lamb, but also don't like that John Fetterman pulled a gun on a black person, then there's somebody else for you in that race.
Malcolm Kenyatta should have won that race.
I was going to say, there's anybody, you could vote for anybody other than Conor Lamb in that race and still, you know.
Be doing the people's work.
Right. But I do think that, like, that Fetterman race will be interesting because, you know, we've seen a lot of these races between sort of, like, the moderates and the progressives, right?
Yeah.
And, like, but what I think is interesting about Fetterman is that he really sort of, like, is seen as, like, a man of the people in the way that some of those other, like, Rust Belt, like, classic liberals have been, in a way that sort of, like, a Sherrod Brown-esque character, which I have sort of, like... you know, always thought is, like, maybe the way to get back into, you know, like, actually have some progressive power by, like, being, you know, somebody who can, like, actually relate to, like, workers. And that's
what could get us back West Virginia. That's what could get us back Ohio. That's what could get us back Pennsylvania. Like, that is the kind of figure that could get us back those union-y Rust Belt states that went to the Republican Party because we haven't fought for them.
And I've got to believe, besides the fact that Conor Lamb is just boring, that is why there's, like, that Fetterman is doing so well.
Well, and I also think...
It's because he's seen as that.
Who is interested right now in consensus? Like, it obviously doesn't work. We have the president can't find consensus. So what is Conor Lamb going to fucking do?
Right. Master of the Senate, Joe Biden, who was supposed to swoop in and find consensus everywhere no one else in the, you know, previous 200 years of America could find. He was supposed to, you know, dig
like
it
some
out
37-year-old Ken doll is going to be the one?
No.
No.
He's not.
Of course not. So... In any case, there's nothing I like better than when the news bashes on Conor Lamb. And so that was a very satisfying day in politics. But if you know anyone in Pennsylvania, let them know there's a very exciting Senate primary going on and they should remember to vote in it.
Right.
And that this is
Not for him.
And not for him. This is actually, I think, a way to have, you know, primaries in a moment like this when you really do want to see change can be very impactful. Because in a change moment, that's when you can elect a candidate who kind of overturns the previous consensus. Mm-hmm. And we really need to do that everywhere that we can right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like part of the reason everyone feels so hopeless is we're failing miserably at doing that. But, like, let this be an opportunity to overturn the consensus.
This is your chance to show Democrats what it means to vote harder.
Exactly. Yeah. Vote harder by voting their choices out.
Yeah.
That's, in any case, screw Conor Lamb.
Speaking of, that's a great segue into our next story.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Maybe you live in California, and you've received a ballot in the mail, and you've already heard us talk about how Brent filled his out, and I didn't fill mine out yet.
12 hours. I got it.
He was like, I think the reason I'm putting it off is because I had an actual panic attack when I filled out my ballot for Joe Biden, like a real one.
I forced you to do that.
I know.
I feel bad about it.
I know. Well, we talked about last week how we're in a circular firing squad with Pat Calvin. So we're just like, it's at this point, we've all done something.
We've done something.
Yeah. But I think because of that, I've just been like unable to open mine.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have a panic attack again.
Yeah.
Who needs it? And luckily, neither of us have to vote in the LA city elections because God forbid. But if you are a person who does, we have some advice for you.
Yeah.
It's don't vote for Rick Caruso.
Don't vote for Rick Caruso. Yeah.
Like, vote for Karen Bass if you want. That's who I would vote for if I could vote for somebody. I'm mad at her, but like, I get it. But also vote for anyone who's not Rick Caruso.
I was going to say, you know, there's a sort of nobody in the race that like DSA has endorsed that they're sort of like not letting into the, you know, they're not letting into the debates, of course, for whatever reason that they're not. But like, you could vote for her too.
Yeah.
And you know what? At this, and I, and you would be doing just as good a work as voting for Karen Bass. And let me tell you why. And I feel I've been happy by the response to this, because I think people are, now that ballots are in people's hands, are starting to pay attention to this. There's a tweet thread that's going viral that I can't remember who wrote it, but what they, basically what they were saying was like, it's the primary. The point right now is to make sure that Rick Caruso doesn't get 50% of the vote.
Right.
So like, just by casting a vote for any one of your choices, and there's too many.
Right.
There's like 74 choices.
There's a lot of options.
You could mark any single solitary person on that ballot that is not named Rick Caruso, and you would be doing the right thing.
That's right.
It's actually easy. I think a lot of people are panicked about, oh, do I vote for Karen Bass? Do I vote for this?
Yeah,
do
it doesn't matter.
Right now, it actually doesn't. Now, obviously, you want to get the best candidate to run against him, so I understand that like maybe you're thinking about that.
Yeah.
But like, the most imminent goal, and people are sort of comparing it to the California, to the recall election, right? Yeah. The goal is to make sure that he doesn't get 50%
in the only prime. One wrong answer and a lot of fine answers.
Yeah.
A lot of right answers.
Yeah.
Because the right answer is just not a vote for him.
Yeah. Although, does it even, you know what? Now I'm thinking about that. Is that stupid? Because it's the primary. It doesn't matter if he gets over 50%. He doesn't win.
No, you do, I think, in the mayor's race. I think you get to just
you skip the general. You just become the mayor at that point?
Yeah, I think you skip the general.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
that's wild.
It's too wild. It's ridiculous. Because it, I mean, I guess it just means that more than, because you could win, you would win the general with more than 50%. So I guess they assume if more than 50% of the electorate.
You just avoid the runoff. Like,
yeah, you don't have to do a runoff. Yeah.
Interesting.
Make sure this doesn't happen, you guys. No one has time for this.
No one has time for that.
Well, New York City already went to the dark side.
Yeah.
By electing a complete idiot nonsense person to be the mayor. We don't need to do that here.
And
I say that knowing that most of you don't really know what the mayor does. And to be honest, a lot of the time I don't either, because LA's city versus county, city versus county power structure is very confusing and stupid. And also a lot of us don't live in the city of LA. So we're like, what does this mean? But it matters in terms, you know, it matters when it comes to policing. It matters when it comes to how we deal with the unhoused. It does matter. So you should care.
Yeah.
And you should care enough just not to vote for Rick Caruso.
Yeah.
And there's also, you know, like if you're, there are some very exciting city council candidates running, and there's actually a couple of open seats.
Yeah.
And so that's also something to keep an eye on. If the one thing you can be excited about to vote for at the city level in LA is the city council, if you have a good candidate.
Yeah.
But that's another one where I'm like, don't vote for an incumbent just because you have to. Only vote for an incumbent that's serving you. And I say that as somebody who also thinks that the most important way, the most important races for you to hear that in is your congressional race.
Right.
Don't vote for Adam Schiff just because you've heard of him.
Oh, my God.
And he led the, you know, an impeachment hearing.
I know.
Anyone can lead an impeachment hearing who is appointed to lead an impeachment hearing.
Yeah.
Just because he's a good lawyer doesn't mean he's a good representative. He's not. Vote for, like, maybe a girl or something. You know, live a little.
Yeah.
Also, maybe a girl's got a more serious campaign going this time.
Yeah, maybe.
So I'm kind of, I'm into it.
That is true, though. I've been over here Googling and smiling and nodding at you while I'm actually reading Google.
Yeah, well, I can fill
that. That's right. 50% of, that's so weird. It seems like even if you're in a top two primary that you would still, because the actual election is in November.
I know.
But anyway, okay. So, then yes, don't vote for Caruso.
Don't.
Stick with what we told you earlier.
That's right.
I'm just confirming what we already said.
But at least we know for sure.
We know for sure. No.
But also, Brent voted for a left unity slate.
Yeah, and I actually think, I wanted to talk about that because I actually think it's really important to do that. And I was, you know, I was already planning to do that, and they only endorsed, you know, statewide races. And I went to, you know, one of the voter guides that I think often gets shared around, really amongst everyone in Los Angeles,
LA.
Is the Knock LA, which is, you know, like an independent online news magazine that I think came out of,
I'm impressed that you're even trying to tell us the history of Knock LA.
I know.
I certainly don't
know. It came out of Ground Game, LA.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I was like, whoo, I'm going to forget. And so it's very progressive. But a lot of people in Los Angeles use it because they, I think, smartly have, like, always release a very well-researched
well, and they, election guide they report about every on city politics. Right, exactly. So, like, oftentimes if you're looking up an obscure scandal in LA politics, it's not LA's website that you end up on.
Right. So I was looking at, I was like, okay, I'm going to look at who DSA endorsed. I'm going to look at who Knock LA endorsed. And then I'm going to look at the Left Unity slate. I'm going to do some cross-checking situation here. And I was very excited to see Knock also endorse the Left Unity slate.
Great.
And look, some of them, if you're going to vote for the Left Unity slate, that involves voting for someone who lists their profession as a writer and a poet.
You know what? And we're a city of creatives.
But what I think is actually important about that, and we've talked about this on the podcast a million times, you know, the left is a very fractured place.
Of course.
There's a lot of infighting. There's a lot of organizations don't necessarily get along with each other. They're secretly feuding with each other. You know, like for the Green Party and the Peace and Freedom Party to have decided that they were going to endorse the same candidates is really not nothing.
Yeah.
And so
I didn't realize this was also a green slate. That's wild.
It's a green and peace and freedom slate. So I actually think, as a person who sort of like has wanted like there to be some sort of project, as we were talking about earlier, that like, do I think that poet is going to become the governor or whatever race he was running in? Probably not. But like, do I think it's actually important for like a air quote leftist to like participate in this project? Yeah. I do, actually. So like, also, I would contend that you should vote for the Left Unity slate if you're in California, and that will require you to maybe make some choices on first blush maybe feel like a choice that you haven't made in the past.
Also, though, this feels like the beginning of maybe seeing the potential in jungle primaries as opposed to just the downside.
I 100% agree.
We have failed to take advantage of what's interesting and good about jungle primaries, even though, you know, a lot of Democrats were in favor of switching to the system because it was supposed to be more democratic, and then it turned out to be less democratic because it's stupid. But one of the opportunities that we have is to kind of divorce ourselves from a two-party structure because 100,000 people run in every single election.
Yep.
And to kind of find opportunities for unity among disparate leftist groups in an effort to kind of like thwart, you know, big party, you know, plans.
So, yeah.
And I have not seen much effort of that or much impact from that, you know, that project so far in the jungle primary era. But I feel like this is an opportunity for us to like actually take advantage of what is good about jungle primaries, which is that you get the opportunity to, you know, vote outside of the party structure.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So and like,
it's valuable for leftist parties to be cooperating because that stops them from only choosing the most radical fringe candidates that can't be elected individually. I mean, the Green Party is guilty of this all over the place.
Totally.
But like, also to make sure that there's a place to go when you're a disaffected Democrat.
Right.
And there should be.
And
currently, part of the reason everyone feels so helpless is there's not.
Yeah. So I actually, you know, if you are a listener of this podcast, you're crazy enough.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
So like, I would really... You're not going to find me, if anybody asks me who I'm voting for, you're not going to find me, you know, telling you to go and cast your vote for Alex Padilla in a Democrat or in a primary for Senate. So like at that point, you're like, okay, well, who else do I vote for? Well, I mean,
let's all agree on someone.
Let's agree on someone. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Also, if you're interested in getting our somewhat voter guide, you can tweet at us with your email address and we'll add you to the list because I'm sending out a voter guide.
Yeah.
That I'm going to make Brent go over.
Yeah. And we'll obviously do another one in the general too, because there'll be even more terrible things.
And we'll do our prop guide in the general. There's going to be props in the general. So that's really what you guys come to us for. You don't really care about who we want to vote for, but you should.
You should.
In any case, let's talk about federal politics a little bit.
This fucking guy, Joe Biden. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just, you know, this was the... Maybe this wasn't the week. Maybe the week was a long time ago when before he even was elected the president. But like, I am like...
This week was just, that week.
I'm getting to the point where like, and I'm going to get shade for this, where I am actually starting to see less of a distinction between this one and the previous administration.
I feel like he's trolling us. I feel trolled.
What he's doing is gaslighting us, which is what a lot of people thought the last administration was doing that. But we got gaslighted this week.
Yeah.
Guys. Yep. A couple times, actually. And not...
Yeah, like, over and over. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
This week was a fucking mess.
This first story is not necessarily gaslighty in the sense that
But
it's stupid. Yeah. He had a big show in the Rose Garden, like, with law enforcement to tell states, beg and plead, implore states to, this is a quote, to every governor, every mayor, every county official, the need is clear. My message is clear. Spend this money now. Use the funds we made available to you. Prioritize public safety. Do it quickly before the summer when crime rates typically surge. This is COVID money, by the way. The money that he's talking about is the money that states just decided not to use because who cared about COVID?
That's right.
Right?
That he wants one to make point, sure they use it for law enforcement.
Yeah, but hire police.
Yeah. Because of the crime rate surging, obviously. And police famously keeping us safe
right,
these days.
Right, I was going to say, obviously. Right.
You know, all the safety that the police departments
fix
are providing.
Fix the crime rate with the extra police officers.
Yeah,
that
that's working perfectly.
That's right.
We already pay more money for police than like any civilization on Earth.
Yeah.
And somehow the crime rates...
Right.
Are what they are anyway.
But I mean, go figure a back the blue All Lives Matter presidential or president.
Right.
Was
yeah, someone
get
who All Lives
this.
Mattered Eric Garner's family would right. be the guy who would make this speech.
Yeah, to their
Who's
face.
Who's the
yeah.
audience for this, though?
I don't know.
Like, his voters don't want this.
I was going to say, the Republicans that aren't going to vote for him?
Like, I don't understand why hold this just to make the police feel good?
I guess.
You don't have to make them feel good. They're fucking up right now.
Yeah. Yeah. The other
Make
thing,
it feel good yeah. when they figure out how to do public safety in a way where nobody dies.
I know. And the other thing about the story is, one, if you're a person, a governor, a mayor, a county official, what you should be doing with that COVID money is spending it on something COVID related.
Yeah. You should be spending it on,
by the way,
making sure that people have access to safe environments to work and go to school.
Yeah.
You should be making sure that schools have appropriate air filtration systems.
Yeah.
You should be making sure that the federal government is helping finance some of the, you know, things that people need to do to retrofit buildings and homes. Like, there's plenty of things you can do with money
yeah.
that will help us stop being constantly racked by COVID.
Yeah. And the other thing that really pisses me off about this is because, and look, I don't care about the spending. Right?
Of course not. Spend as much as you want. It's
right,
fake money.
Right. It's fake money. Spend $10 trillion.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. But I do think that it's wild, as a person who is spent all week also talking about the deficit, we're going to get to that story mm-hmm. in a second, is out here begging and pleading with them to use this COVID money on hiring police while he's also working on a side $10 billion COVID bill with Mitt Romney in the Senate.
Yeah.
About something. And I'm not. And I'm
Tell
not,
them to use the money for what you needed the $10 billion
right.
COVID bill for.
I was going to say, and I'm not. And also pass the $10 billion. It's like I
Obviously.
Said, it's not the spending that is bothering.
No.
Bothersome to me. But it's bizarre when that's a thing that's happening. And I also, while you're thinking about that $10 billion that he's working on with Mitt Romney, that vote got pushed because he implored the Senate to pass a $40 billion Ukraine aid bill,
okay.
which passed in a matter of seconds as soon as he said, I want more money for Ukraine.
That's right.
Now, I guarantee you, without question, that $10 billion, which one-fourth of the money that we
right.
just fired off into the ether of you with to just Ukraine, they're going to quibble about that $10 billion
oh.
for COVID.
As if it's coming out of their individual pockets.
Correct. Yeah.
That's right. Well, of yeah. course they are. I mean,
yeah.
that's their way.
Yeah.
That's why I say don't worry about
right.
the system as
and
it
again,
is now.
I'm
it doesn't
not
work.
Saying, like, I'm not... That's not me saying don't send the $40 billion to Ukraine.
No, it's saying why not take care of ourselves, too?
Yeah, spend all the money. That's
We're
I'm
literally
saying.
Hearing them announce that they might have to only allow vaccines for the most in need. And this
yeah.
is all while rates are crazy everywhere. Everyone around
yeah.
us is getting COVID. People are getting sick in bad ways, long-term
yeah.
ways, in front of our very eyes. And we're having to hear them go on about how they can't afford to get us new vaccines. But,
right.
you know, we should
but,
get the police should make sure
right,
they have
can,
too much money.
But we
money.
Can hire police and fight a proxy war.
Exactly. Like, come on.
Yikes.
Speaking of vaccines. They had a little bit of a blunder this week as well.
Not so much of a blunder that they took this tweet down, by the way. It's still up.
What?
It was as of like 48 hours after they tweeted it.
That is unbelievable to
yeah.
me. And
well,
also
Well, because people are mad
fully.
At Twitter for not flagging it.
It's
and they
misinformation.
Should've, it's misinformation. They should have flagged it.
They sent out
it,
a tweet
yeah.
saying that there weren't vaccines when they took office. There were fucking vaccines when they took office.
Joe Biden was double vaccinated when he took
when
office.
When he took office. Exactly. I got my first vaccine 5 days after he took office. Not because he rushed it to me.
No.
Like.
Yeah.
Infuriating. But also, they're going on and on about the deficit.
Yeah.
And the reason that they're able to go on and on about the deficit
yeah.
is a problem related to the last story that we just brought you.
Oh, yeah.
Which is that all the COVID programs are ending. So all this money that was being pumped into the economy by the federal government is no longer being pumped into it. So good news, the deficit's going down.
I know. It's so stupid.
Like,
it's
you guys.
It's so stupid. I mean, this fucking guy. Yeah, it's because he's not spending the amount of money on COVID that Trump was.
That's, and that's, I feel like they continue to fall into this trap, and this is why I feel like Democratic messaging is dumb on top of just policy being mm-hmm. dumb. Because when Trump was in office, he promised us the $2,000, and the Democrats were the ones who were like, let's make it $1,400 because he gave you $600 before. But the fact is Trump had already given us $2,400. And so we were going into this new administration with direct benefits coming from the Trump administration that we could point to and be like, my bank account is bigger because of Donald Trump. Now, yeah. I understand the reality of that being a completely insane point of view to have on the situation, and also Trump not caring at all about you. Like, I get all of the actual realities.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who's just like walking around being a nobody and you just like, you know, care about politics to the extent that it affects you personally, like the Democrats failed you on that because they yeah. promised you $2,000 and they didn't give you $2,000. Oh.
We got some
dog noises going on. But I mean, like, this is just like another continuation of that problem where we got all of this aid under the Trump administration because Congress actually acted to do something for the first time in history. And then as soon as Biden took office, they were like, well, we can't continue the aid. No. So the aid is all going to disappear under Biden, which means that people will remember the flush times where they had extra unemployment checks under Donald Trump. And then they're going to be like, remember the lean times where we didn't have jobs or food or baby formula under Joe Biden? That's right now.
Yeah.
And they're just okay with that for some reason.
They seem to be very
they're just
okay
leaning
with that.
Into the messaging to fucking lecture us about how the deficit's going down. What the fuck do I care about the deficit? Like, is that like, are we supposed to feel like a great sense of accomplishment that a group project has finally been achieved where yeah. we like suffered so the deficit could right. go down?
Well, and the other thing that is disingenuous about it is that, like, and look, I wish the $1.9 trillion package would have passed, obviously, right? But like the idea that the deficit is down because he did something so great and wonderful when he himself was trying to pass a $1.9 trillion bill, which would have wiped out the $1.5 trillion deficit reduction that we're having, is ridiculous. Now,
he's like
again,
basically congratulating like, himself for failing to
for
achieve
failing
his goals.
To pass his like entire agenda.
That's right. That's right.
This guy.
Unbelievable. Classic guy. Also, though, this baby formula shortage is a political boondoggle, the likes of which I do not know even what to say about.
I think people, people are just, I think, not paying attention unless it's directly affecting them. But, like, imagine to yourself, 4 years ago, Donald Trump is president.
Yeah.
A baby formula factory shuts down in February.
Right.
And the first time Donald Trump says anything about it is when he's asked about it at a press conference in the middle of May.
That's right.
National scandal.
Total
national scandal.
Yeah. That's rightfully.
Rightfully. 100%. Yeah. Well, that's what's happening right now.
That's right.
And when he got asked about it, by the way, he said that, so you got asked, are you satisfied with your administration's response? Blah, 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 blah. And he said, if we'd been better mind readers, I guess we could have done better. They have known about this for months and have been...
The recall was in February.
Yeah, it was in February.
Like, the recall was in February. They had already been having, like, hearing about this from the internet.
Of course.
Because I was hearing about it. So I became aware of the baby formula shortage, not from a politician's office, but from a friend who was looking for baby formula.
Well, and Dianne Feinstein's office didn't know about it either. Remember, there was that tweet that went out this week that somebody called and asked her about it. And she was
How
there,
is it possible
her
that
staffers
she...
staffers were like, what are you talking about?
Like, how is it possible that me, a childless person, found out about it from the internet, just from friends looking for baby formula?
Yeah.
And, like, our elected officials hadn't found out about it when they, like everyone, were able to get the information that a major formula factory had closed.
Yeah.
I just, like, but this is also, this is just, like, it's such bad messaging. It's such a bad look. Baby formula?
I know.
For babies?
Well,
for little helpless babies, that's what they've decided not to worry about?
Well, and also in the midst of, you know, we've been seeing a lot from Democrats, you know, talking about how Republicans are disingenuous by calling themselves pro-life.
Yeah.
And what we usually say is, like, how can you be pro-life if you don't care about what happens to the baby after it's born, right? And we use, you know, healthcare and education, and it's really a fair point, right? And then you're ceding this issue to nutbags like Elise Stefanik, who's been like out there like being the most vocal people because she's, I think, has like a newborn or like fairly young child or whatever, talking about this. You've ceded like taking care, like you've ceded feeding babies to Republicans.
To Republicans. It's like the most basic in political messaging. Kissing and feeding babies is
oh,
like,
your baby's starving? Sorry about your life. Call your doctor. That's what Jen Psaki said.
Call your doctor.
Your doctor that we want. Don't that you worry. Probably don't have.
We're going to get formula onto the shelves soon so you can fucking buy it.
Like, I know. Well, that's what you said.
Buy it for
buy
them.
Buy it and ship it to people.
Right? Buy it and give it to people. Yeah. Like the federal government, this is like a problem.
Use the Defense Production Act. People are begging for them to do that. And
yes.
They're considering it.
Like, for babies, we have to sit around scratching our asses, like, just wondering if we should do something? Like, this is an opportunity to look like you actually take care of people.
I know.
And it's something that everyone would agree was a good idea. Nobody actually wants babies to starve. Even Republicans don't want babies to starve.
No.
That's so universal to the human experience that everyone on Earth would agree that this is a true emergency.
Yep.
People with children, people without children. It's not like I would sit around being like, "Why? Where's my healthcare subsidy?" while they're busy trying to feed. Like, this is not something that people are going to be like, "Where's my thing?"
I know.
People want you to make sure babies are fed. That's so, right. Like, this is just like a slam dunk of a political issue. It's also, like, important. And it's also something that they are actually empowered to do something about because they are the federal government and they do have the power to find a way to manufacture more baby formula. They have the power. Also, baby formula should be free anyway. So, like, they have the power to make sure that poor women have always been able to get baby formula.
Yeah.
And they've been not exercising that power, clearly. But I mean, like, the idea that the solution here is, like, call your doctor or, like, wait until it shows up in the store. What's your baby supposed to eat until it shows up in the store?
There'll probably be a website tomorrow where you can order
it. In 6 weeks, you can get 4 things of baby formula.
But you also have to make under a certain amount of money to be able to actually access it. And you have to have the last, like, you know, 12 months worth of pay stubs to prove how poor you are.
Exactly.
That'll be the solution from this White House.
Like, the answer cannot be, don't worry, you can feed your baby soon.
I know.
That's not a solution.
It's not funny. I'm laughing. It's not funny.
No, but I mean, like, that's a crazy thing for them to even think is political messaging humans should think of.
I know.
So, like, in any case, this week was not it for the Trump administration. Jen Psaki's gone, though.
It really did feel to me like they're flailing.
They are flailing.
They're flailing.
And they are, I think, going to continue flailing, because the other thing that happened this week was that the New York Times editorial board published an op-ed that was basically like, don't cancel student debt. Well, and it's so obviously placed by the
Biden administration. Well, that's what I was going to say. They're not flailing about that, because that was placed, because they've also got other minions out there doing the same thing right now. I listened to a speech from Paul Begala on Bill Maher, both of them talking about how terrible of a loser politically it would be to cancel student debt.
What, so. Like, the New York Times editorial literally says that it's better to take targeted means-tested actions than to cancel student debt, because that will only help rich people. That is a Republican talking point.
No.
That is not the case.
And untrue. It's factually untrue.
Factually untrue Republican talking point. And also, the idea that the federal government can be trusted to equitably means-test people when they've never once proven their ability to do that even one time in their lives is laughable at best.
Yeah.
But, like, this editorial reads as if it was written by Joe Biden himself. It reads as if it was written, or maybe just like Paul Begala himself. I mean, it reads as if it was written by the sort of the exact kind of like moderate, like liberal elite. And it basically like weaponizes the language and priorities of the left in an effort to discredit an equitable policy. Because what it does is it goes on about how just forgiving student debt is not an equitable solution, and an equitable solution involves targeting those most in need. And it's like, yeah, make sure that when you cancel student debt, those most in need have access to that cancellation.
Yeah.
But we're actually in a situation where it would make sense both politically and financially to just fucking cancel people's student debt.
Yeah.
This is not actually something that is disproportionately affecting rich people in the way that you're framing it.
Yeah.
This is something that is being held over the heads of the exact professional class that you guys come from.
Yeah.
So, like, this is, and framing it, it's like the Pete Buttigieg billionaires going to public school discussion.
Right.
It's such, it's sort of like misread of the conversation. Yeah. It weaponizes the left's own words to justify taking moderate actions that don't actually help anyone. Mm-hmm. And it does it in a way that is so fucking condescending and ridiculous that I can't, I mean, I just commented on that, but I can't comment further because I'm going to say something mean, and you guys get it. You know I feel mean. But, like, talking about how this is this would be regressive to cancel it across the board, this is not taxation in the way that you're, like, this is not, no, this is not it. It's not the same thing. making a parallel between those two is insane. Yeah. Doing any of the things that they do in this editorial are insane. And also letting the Biden administration let themselves off the hook in an effort to redirect a conversation that they don't want to do anything about but was a campaign promise. Yeah, it's so fucking low. It's low of the Times editorial board. It's low of the Biden administration. It's low of society. It's low of, I'm blaming Paul Begala. I don't know if he was involved. I hate him. So whatever. Yeah. But it's like, it's just so fucking sleazy.
Yeah, I know.
It's mean.
It's mean.
I hate when people are mean.
Yeah.
Also, it's a mean person. They continue in this article. They go on about the benefits of having halted that debt, which had huge financial benefits to everyone, and how much interest it saved everyone, and then use that as an argument for not canceling it. And like, fine, just halt it forever then. I don't care.
Well,
like, do whatever. Like, halt the payments until the end of time. Who fucking cares?
Yeah.
But like, the idea that they use what was so successful about an across-the-board halt of payments to student debt as an example of why we shouldn't cancel it, I mean, it blows. It's just, it. You guys. You guys. Crazy. What the fuck? In any case, I realize that Joe Biden is not a great progressive hero.
No, never was.
But I also feel like I don't want to hear the Times editorial board going on about this in this way.
No. But you want to know what, like, look, really the only reason that I think, besides not being Trump,
right,
I think one of the main reasons why people were like, let's vote for him because then we will have some competence in government.
Right. Yeah, and this is not a week of competence. We
are not, that is not what we are getting.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's, well, and that's like, that's frustrating also because Joe Biden is a man famous for making outrageous gaffes.
That's true.
So the promise that he was going to be so super competent when his record is riddled with frustrating, you know, problematic statements that were not misspoken at the time.
Right.
His public persona is marred by the fact that he says wildly inappropriate things constantly.
Yeah.
And he has nothing really to show for his time in the Senate that isn't like an aggressively moderate problematic policy.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know what I don't know that we should anymore hold fast to the idea that he's competent just because he's old and still in government. I think we have this sense that these people, because they've stuck around, are competent. And we're seeing that they're not. Nancy Pelosi was at one time competent, I would say. I don't think that right now is that time, though.
Sure.
That's not to say that she's not a smart and powerful woman, but she's not using her power to make the things happen that she was elected to make happen.
Yeah.
And so that is not competence. Chuck Schumer is not able to marshal votes for something as simple as, you know, getting his entire party to vote that women should have the right to choose. Like, that's not competence. And Joe Biden is flailing on every front, has allowed a national baby formula shortage to happen. Like, and is wandering around, placing editorials like this in major national newspapers and then wondering why youth voters aren't interested in him.
I know.
Scratching their heads, just wondering, I wonder why young people aren't interested in us.
Mm-hmm.
We just constantly condescend to them and tell them we're not going to do what we said that we would do for them.
Yeah.
But like, where could they have gone? They should just vote harder. We can't do anything if they don't vote harder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, meanwhile, inflation is terrible right now.
So bad.
So you have effectively been given the opposite of a raise.
Oh, yeah, you got
just by
cut.
Living in society.
It's called a pay cut.
A pay cut, that's what I meant to say. I was like, I know there's a term for this, but I can't remember what it is. Elon Musk would let Trump back on Twitter, so we might be at the end of
times. But also he's like a poor person now, so he can't buy Twitter.
That's right. This Elon Musk Twitter conversation has been a real adventure to follow.
It has, I know.
We've had multiple mass shootings this weekend.
Oh my God, I know, so awful.
And I think at this point, it's worth noting, because I know that everyone is sort of like, always asks like, was this racially motivated after one of these happens? And of course they all were, so like calm down. But also, in that our gun policy is racially motivated, these are all racially motivated. Like the policy is racially motivated. So like, it's not even worth asking that question in the way that we've been asking it. It's worth asking the question so that victims' families have answers and blah, blah, blah. Like, I get why
charging them as hate crimes.
Totally. Like, I get why we do that. But I just, like, at a certain point, having this gun policy is a hate crime. So, like, even if you're just a crazy person who accidentally, not accidentally, but purposely, but crazy-wise accidentally, like, shoots up a random thing for no reason that has no connective tissue, that's just you in a mall somewhere being a weirdo, like, that's still ultimately the legacy of racist gun policy. So yeah. That's a hate crime too in its own way. Mm-hmm. Like, all of these are ultimately racist shootings because the policy is racist. So like, just like, let's not assume that there's a distinction to be made necessarily.
Yeah. Anyway. And let's also start laying, you know, if Republicans don't want to blame the guns themselves, right? Then let's start blaming Tucker Carlson.
Perfect. I'm in.
Right?
Blame that asshole.
Like, because I think a lot of this guy's manifesto, well, this kid, I mean, it's
18, it's always, it's a kid. It's always a kid. Yeah.
It was a lot of sort of like, I don't know, some craziness like white replacement theory or something. Oh, yeah. I don't even know, like, or whatever. But it's like, it's shit that he heard on Fox News.
Yeah, of course.
So like, it's not video games, guys.
No. No. Surprisingly, wandering around in fake war paraphernalia shooting at things is not actually what radicalizes you to these. It's listening to
it's Fox News.
Bow tie wearing idiots.
That's right.
So let's blame them.
Yeah, let's do it.
But also, that's another issue where I'm like, let's use our imaginations. We've shown 100%. That the system itself is incapable of addressing this.
We wrote a great blog about this.
We wrote a great blog about this.
We have a million wonderful ideas for what to do about the gun
It starts with banning all of them.
Well, banning all of them and then also, like, removing them from people's homes.
That's right. Forcibly.
I know people get nervous about that whenever I say that, and they always look at me like I have, like, three heads, but I mean it.
If we're going to live...
If you think I'm kidding, I'm not.
If we're going to live in a fascist society, let's fucking commit.
Right. Great. Yeah.
In any case, we do have a great blog about this. We have our own special gun policy theory that we've been peddling for years that,
Freedom horns.
Freedom horns.
We were going to make French horns out of them.
We were going to improve the quality of orchestras.
I told you these were good ideas, guys.
In any case, that's the news this week. We're back, you know? We're back and on track.
Yeah.
We don't prep for the podcast anymore. We just come and rant and then we go home. <That's right. laughs> But we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah.
Bye.